Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Get Out of Rap. Today, I'm joined by Ellie Neal from BPA Quality, and I'm really happy to be doing this one. For those watching on YouTube, you'll see two big smiling faces. It's because we know each other, and we've done things like the Three Peaks and some crazy other BPA challenges that have been done in the past. But Ellie is an awesome human, and I'm so happy to be doing this. So welcome to Get Out of Rap.
Hey, thank you. It's great to be here. I really appreciate it.
So let's start with, Ellie, your kind of career history in terms of how you've got to be where you are now. Where did it all start for you?
Okay. So yeah, I mean, I've actually worked for BPA Quality for 17 years. Definitely part of the family, part of the furniture. But I think for me, you know, reflecting on my history at BPA, very much had many different roles. I've been able to tap into lots of different skills and really find what really resonates well with me. So my passions. And yeah, so throughout the years, I've established that I'm quite a geek. I absolutely love data. I love being able to find insights, and I love the creativity that's behind it. So at the moment, I've been signed up for an apprenticeship. So I do level 7 AI and data science apprenticeship at BPA. And it's been a very exciting journey, I think, being able to understand how to apply this, you know, how to apply data science to our work and what we do, and also being able to improve some of the areas for our customers.
Well, you said when we were chatting that you found your calling, that you feel like this has been the thing that you've been working towards all this time.
Yeah, it definitely does, because I've kind of like, throughout the years, I very much delved into, I believe it like kind of started with Excel. So Excel for me was you could just do so much. It was so accessible. And I think from there, just being able to build my confidence to know that, you know, what's next. So when you get a barrier with Excel, let's say it's lots of data and it's literally freezing on you, you then start thinking, okay, well, how can I expand my tool here? What else could I be using? And you naturally progress to Power BI. So you can process a lot more data, you can make it a lot more interactive for people. And then you very much go onto the side of, okay, who's using this tool? Like, how can I make it accessible for them? And from there, you then run into some more barriers, and then you want to maybe build some predictive models for data science methods. So then you start expanding your horizon a bit more and thinking, well, I think I need to learn a programming language here. And that's when I went into Python, and it was a very, very tricky journey to learn that. But once I got it, that was it. I was absolutely in love, and I haven't looked back. Initially, I was very self-taught, but with the introduction of ChatGPT, as you know, with this generative AI, it's becoming a lot more accessible for people to learn these programming languages. And I'm very excited actually to see where that will go. I think, yeah, it'd be great.
So help me understand, yeah, a programming language, and I've always been kind of, when we were working at BPA at the same time, I'm either in the industry or client facing or with our guys, whatever you've been doing, it's always struck me is that you are doing whatever it is to be able to help, to be helpful, and to help either employees or customers. First of all, when you say Python, well, how is that helpful? What does it allow you to do? And it's then something that you've combined with AI, right? Is that right?
Yeah. So Python is the core language that it's essentially you're sort of talking to your computer and being able to access a lot more tools in order to complete certain tasks. So I could use Python to ingest lots of data, like, and then process lots of data as well, but in lots of different ways. And I think when it comes to working with our clients, like one of the big programs that I designed and put together was a time series analysis predictive model. So it was very easy in comparison to Excel to be able to run those types of analysis for our customers. So what it meant that when I was designing it in Excel, and that's my limit to my knowledge, once I learned Python and I started my apprenticeship, I started picking out, okay, we can build functions here. And then I would look at how I did it in Excel and then figure out how to do it in Python. And instead of having to recreate it every time, it was instant. So then by transferring everything over to a Python language, it became a script. That meant that I can just click a button and it would just do the job, saving hours and then also improving the quality. So I think from an efficiency point of view, it's definitely helped. But what that meant was it released me a little bit more to do more work for our customers and take on more problems and solve more problems. Because I'm definitely a problem solver gal. Like it's in my genes, it's in my blood. So yeah. And I think that's what Python enables me to do is have that creativity and flexibility to tackle anything really. And I've recently been moving my skills over to more of a like building applications for the users. So it's very much using it's a company called Data Button. They're great, really great team of guys, created a fantastic product. And in the back end of it, it's Python, but it enables you to build a full stack website with just your Python skills. They've taken care of everything else. But what that means is I can bring applications to people just with my Python knowledge, and I don't have to worry about any of the other, you know, back end kind of stuff of being able to build something.
Wow.
It's fantastic. And I think it's going to be a game changer with when we come to generative AI. What I've been doing with generative AI is both in work and outside of work. As you know, I'm super passionate about it and I'm always making like apps and stuff. And so the one app that I really, really enjoyed making and it took a while to design was the mind map. So of course, as you know, we spoke about, I have ADHD. And one of the challenges I had was I would be confronted with this, like maybe a website and it's completely stacked with text. And that could mean one of two things. I either look at it and go, I can't read that. Like that's too much.
Yeah.
I start reading it and I will go into a complete rabbit hole. If there's links on there, I'm gone. I would click through what's next. So I'm like, okay, take a step back. What do I want to know from this website? So what I designed the application to do was you could put that URL in. It scrapes all that website text. It takes it all in and it will then organize it for me. So I prompt engineered the AI to identify what the key takeaways are from that particular article. And then that each of those become a node on my mind map. And then what it does is I've also then said, okay, for each node, provide me with a little summary about that node. And therefore you've then got branches coming off and all you need to do is just look up and then out, okay. And then if you want to go into it further, you can, but if not, you've got a good gist of what's on that website. And it's really visible.
I can't be the only person that's thinking, how do I get this app?
Oh, it's on LinkedIn. Yeah. Yes. And the great thing about it is honestly, I'm really not trying to big myself up here, but it didn't actually put it together. It didn't take too long. I just needed to figure out how to prompt engineer it. And the really great thing is it's using this code syntax. So the AI will generate the code as well. And not only can you make mind maps with that code, you can make flowcharts. So as you can imagine, someone with ADHD or any sort of neurodivergent individual might struggle to understand written steps. So what you can do is take an article, let's say that I'm trying to get a product of mine fixed and I go onto their website and it's like text. What I can do is paste that into the app and it will generate a flowchart for me to show me visually, okay, step one, step two, step three,
Wow. Okay,
what else? And it will do the relationships. And this is what I'm seeing with generative AI is especially for people who are neurodivergent, we kind of need this intervention in the middle where someone's taking all of that knowledge and text and information that's out there and changing it into something that we can understand. But to do that, it takes time. You know, if you imagine trying to do that to every single individual article or every step that's being generated, maybe in a K-Base article or something like that, that's going to take time and resource. But actually what we're enabling here is through the use of generative AI, we're able to make that happen instantly. Like you literally are pasting something in and it will generate your document based on how you've designed it. And I think what that enables, you know, neurodivergent individuals to do is be it's more accessible for them to learn new information, to acquire new skills, to be the best that they can be. Like the challenge of navigating through learning material, documentation, it can be a real stopper. It can really sort of, if you start finding it challenging, you can start going into a downward spiral. Whereas if you take those challenges away and make it super simple, you can then really lean into your strengths. So for me, like when I'm learning how to build these applications, I've got the use of generative AI, whether it's through ChatGPT or through Cohere. I'm able to ask questions. I'm able to break things down. I'm able to brainstorm. I'm able to go explain this to me like I'm five. I love that one. Or provide this as an analogy for me because I just don't get it.
Yes.
I love that part. And I think once we start making that more accessible for people, that's when we're going to be able to start leaning into our strengths. And I definitely feel like this year for me, I felt like I've achieved quite a lot. I've been able to move forward with things and my strengths are clearly coming out. You know, I've been very grateful to be recognized in some awards and things like that. Like, and I genuinely believe that's because I've leaned into the use of these tools to help limit those challenges for me. And it's just helped me to kind of soar. But don't get me wrong, I'm still having challenges. Like we spoke earlier, basic administration tasks. Yes, I could build a really cool app that generates a mind map, but ask me to fill in a timesheet or ask me to log my activities on a journal. So
now you touched on it then, but I think like anyone that's known you, we're absolutely buzzing to see some of these awards that you, and I know the type of person you are, you don't want to share these, but just talk to me about some of the awards that you've won.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm truly like humbled as well. Like it's very, the first one was Apprenticeship of the Year for Cambridge Spark. So yeah, it was amazing. Just to be nominated, I was just like, what? And that was, you know, I mentioned earlier about when I first started the course, I made some efficiencies using Python functions and was able to improve some of our processes. There was that part of it, but I was also generating some apps for some of the learners. So I would help them with, like, I built an app that could help them with their project. So if they don't know how to apply their data science, it would use generative AI to give them some ideas of what they could do. So there were things like that that I was putting together. And I was also, I'm very grateful to be part of one of the associates for AI for C. So that's AI for Charities. Really amazing group of people, very supportive, that I was invited to do a talk with them around like chatbots. And it was sort of late last year. So I started to put myself out there and then without even knowing that there was awards, and then I got recognized. It was lovely. And the second one was a special recognition by BCS. So yeah, that was lovely. We got to go up to Manchester for a really cool event, and yeah, it was great. And then I got an email a couple of weeks ago saying that I'd been nominated for 100 Women in Tech Award. So I kind of I'm going through that now. It's just crazy.
Wow, that's brilliant. That is amazing.
Yeah. And I think what's good about those is, yes, it's nice to have the recognition, but I think it does help to build your confidence. It does help me to feel that, yeah, you're making a difference. Like people are noticing that it's helpful what you're doing. And I think even just having the award, it just helps for other people to look at me and go, okay, she's got ADHD. I'm talking about my struggles openly, but it is still possible to be the best you can be. And I would say it's not easy. Like, as you know, it's very, very difficult, but it is completely possible to find joy in what you're doing and to be achieving things if that's what you're passionate about.
So. Something there. I mean, there's so much you've said there that's super interesting. And I'm so proud of you. I think you're such a lovely person. And for people that don't know, this passion for helping others, and also, you know, neurodiversity has always been a passion of yours, and making sure that everyone is included. And I know very early on in my time at BPA, you were featured on the BBC for being open and talk. And I know these things were difficult to do, but you talked about your own neurodiversity, and also that you'd set up the Mental Health Champions BPA as well. Then that was a while ago, wasn't it?
That was a while ago, but and that was such an amazing experience. And how that came about was just after my son was born, I had really severe anxiety. Like, I've always kind of had anxiety, depression all through my life since I was younger. I was severely bullied at school, and there was like quite a few challenges, you know, where we had like a house fire with us. So my growing up was very tricky, and we were quite, didn't have much. So in and out of anxiety and depression. But then when my son was born, the anxiety was very severe, and I really had to work hard to get out of that, especially when you've got a little one that needs you. So from that, you know, I started running, and I started seeing somebody. So I spoke to a counselor and really sort of worked through it. And one thing I noticed that helped was being able to speak to people about it and just accepting it and being like, this is normal. Like, I'm not weird. This is completely normal to go through. It's horrible. But what helps is talking to people. So I asked Jude, I said, do you think this might help? So I wrote this email. It took me a while. And it was very much just like explaining what I've been through and what's helped me in the past. And if anyone wants to talk, I'm here. That went out, and instantly I had so many messages back from people like, thank you so much for sharing, you know. And it just started this momentum of people coming forward with their own stories, their own challenges. And eventually we sort of got this group together of people that were thinking about how we support people at BPA, how we make this, how we improve our culture of how we support people with their mental well-being. And it was a great time, you know. It's just to our core now, it's there. Mm. And I think that's what helps me to feel so, you know, I've been, as I say, at BPA for 17 years. Like, I know that they care. Like, I know that there's that culture is there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just, that's the story, I guess, on that one.
But it's running through everything that you're talking about, is whether it is people who have also gone through things or are neurodivergent, or clients, or one of the things you said there, and I think it's something that we don't get enough, it's not talked about enough, is you said AI for charity, right? And I think when everyone kind of in, I would kind of class myself in this group, you're hearing about AI, you're venturing into using ChatGPT to help you with certain things, but you're also hearing how this could end up being like Black Mirror, and we're all creating our own downfall. This is the first time I've heard anyone to associate AI with charity. So can you just talk about that a sec?
Yeah, sure. So the organization AI for C is very much this, you know, there's lots of members that are representing the charity organizations around the UK. And Paul Excel, who is like amazing, he like, you know, sort of leads the whole thing. And he, you know, they've got this vision where it's just bringing all these members together and then having some people that are super geeky, maybe, come to the group and just bring in insights into what's going on and where the opportunities might be. And it just helps to start those discussions off about how AI can be used to improve, you know, because as we know, especially with this generative AI, it spans across multiple areas, like not only improving efficiency, so you can reduce the cost of the running of the charity organizations, you can improve the experience of what you're providing to the people who are recipients of the charity work. You're also, you know, if you've got lots of volunteers that are supporting, how can you improve their sort of experience and how they work? There's just so much to be had. And I think just starting the conversation in very early days of, in the scheme of things, of generative AI, what small things can be brought in just to start that ball rolling? Because a small efficiency gain for a charity can mean so much. That has an impact on someone receiving that charity work. Like that's huge. So yeah, I think with AI for C, it brings me so much joy being part of that community because I know how much impact they'll have on many people, with whether it's, you know, a Cancer UK or something like that, or, you know, any other sort of charity. It's to my core, like what I want to be doing and helping.
I love it.
You are listening to Get Out of Rap.
And it's nice to hear a different story about AI. I guess our industry, right, and from your journey within BPA and the BPA providing quality monitoring services for the contact center world. If you think about contact centers, the one thing we've always had is data. So there is just data about everything, and there's so much of it. That must be like a wonderful, wonderful thing for someone like yourself.
I love it. It's like a treasure trove. One thing I love, especially at the moment, is the combining the quantitative data, so, you know, your usual metrics. Now we can unearth insights from words. Like, this is what I absolutely love about generative AI. Because if you think about ChatGPT or GPT models in general, they're trained on billions of parameters of text. And I think there's some like stat around the equivalent of someone reading for 5,000 years or something ridiculous like that is what is in ChatGPT or GPT models. But what that means is actually GPT has, and these models, whether it's through OpenAI or Cohere, they have learned this pattern. They've learned to understand how people communicate. And it's just, there's so many possibilities of what you can do, which makes it quite tricky. But once you understand what they are and you start with your kind of problem area, okay, let's imagine that we've got, you know, in a contact center, we've got a whole knowledge base and we've got loads of text, of course, because including procedures, policies, you know, all sorts of information. What we've got at the moment is very simple keyword matches. And as we know, that can be very challenging because you have to type the right thing in. You might miss some nuances in some of the procedures. But what we're actually seeing now is we can build these applications that can use generative AI, so a semantic search is what it's called, and they call it retrieval augmented generation. So I can use the chat UI to ask a question about an article. So let's say that I've got quite a tricky call and there's something very slightly different about it and I need to be very specific about, maybe it's a certain region, maybe it's a certain type of customer, and there's a certain procedure that's tucked nicely away somewhere. I'll do is I'll say it in natural language. I'll say, this is the customer's looking for this, you know, and it will find the most relevant information based on the semantic meaning within those words. It's so powerful. And not only that, it will respond back to me as a chat. So based on what I've said, it'll be very bespoke to that individual and what I've actually put in there. And then it will also retrieve the sources. I mean, that's just one of
I can't help but think of all of the times that we were talking to existing clients or potential new clients who would say, rightly so, our world is very complex. Maybe they were financial services, maybe they were healthcare, maybe there was something very intricate, loads and loads of information, hundreds and hundreds of policy documents, and the absolute cast iron need for those things to be accurately discussed with customers. This seems like the perfect application of that. You know, to give people in the moment, in a conversational way, 100% confidence around the accuracy of what they're saying, because the AI then has gone in and found what I need, and it's done it in an accurate and easy way. Yeah,
perfect. Yeah. So you imagine someone is calling up and they're quite distressed. You think about they're feeling quite vulnerable and they're having some difficulties. The last thing they want to be doing is waiting on hold with, you know, that really annoying music going, well, what's happening? Whilst the advisor's, you know, very struggling to find the information. Like, there's two things happening there and there's two people getting frustrated who then have to converge back and have, you know, still maintain a good interaction. you just think about all that effort and that came, I guess, that of trying to find information, like that shouldn't be a problem anymore. And the sooner we start making little changes like that, the way that, you know, it might seem, I guess it is quite little in the scheme of things, but it could have a huge impact. But, and that's one application of this AI. Mm-hmm. I imagine, you know, and I do, I geek out about it all the time. I draw like map. I just processing. I think about, okay, here's the steps and this is how we could use it. And once we start doing that, having this internal assessment about, okay, where are the pain points? You know, finding out how AI and generative AI can help, you then start to condense down and think, okay, what's simple now? Where should we start with this? And it's just starting those conversations. And I would say that so how can I explain this? So there's kind of like three different stages of when you sort of start working with generative AI. The first one is what I call the tinkering stage. So you've got people at all different areas of the business, no matter what role they're in, maybe going on to ChatGPT or maybe visiting Cohere's website or some other provider. And you're just having a go. You just go, okay, what can this thing do? I'll think about my day and where my pain points are, and I'll see what happens. Because then I'm pretty sure that everyone will be like, oh my gosh, in their first reaction. But then you start getting more used to it. And then you bring that back in as a group and think, okay, you know, here's some of the things that it did well. Here's some of the things that didn't go so well. And the people that have already been through that transition, we're realizing that some of the things that don't go well are, you know, sometimes the model can do what they call hallucination or confabulation of information, which means that it's because it's been trained on all of those billions of parameters, it's using its whole corpus of information to answer your question, which means that it can sound very confident in what it's providing. But the retrieval augmented generation is the next step. That's step two after tinkering. That's when you start to get your personal information. So it could be you've got knowledge base articles, you've got, you know, information stored locally. And what happens is you use that search element to bring in that context to help you with your tinkering. So now your tinkering is a lot more powerful because it's based on your internal data. Then the exciting thing happens is the stage three, which a lot of organizations will take quite a while to get to, is the use of knowledge agents. So this is where you can start to use other tools. So let's say that you want to not only search your internal database, you also want to be able to access the internet. So, you know, as part of one call, let's say that my query is, you know, it's look up based on the weather today in Exeter, where should I go? Where should I go swimming, I guess? You know, it can then search, see what the internet says about the weather today. And also maybe I've got something stored locally that tells me all my favorite places to go swimming, depending on the weather. So it will bring all of that in and it will then help with my answer. So the knowledge agents, I think, are going to be so powerful in any organization. And it's extremely exciting. But I think, you know, I've talked there a lot about innovation. I've talked about where it could possibly go to for people and organizations. But I think one thing we have to think about is during this process, understanding where are the risks. So if you think about, yes, you might have identified that you can do something a lot quicker, you might also realize, okay, that means that someone else could. And it's like, okay, what does that mean for us? And it's just having that in mind. It's not just thinking about the, you know, oh, this is amazing, this is what we do. You have to be cautious of, okay, well, what does that mean for our industry? What does that mean for our people? And that's something I'm very passionate about. It's thinking about, you know, because I know Goldman Sachs have released something, you know, very powerful statistics around how it's going to impact productivity and like knowledge roles, which we would never have thought would be at risk through technology, not as soon as it has been. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the realizations is really taking responsibility and thinking about people. Okay, if this happens and we can do this, how can we upskill our people to then do activities that would generate more value, mm-hmm. rather than just thinking about, oh, we don't need that resource anymore. It's like actually those people amazing at that. And we need to augment what they're doing with this AI so we can build a better product for our customers. Human in the loop has always been a thing for, especially like, I know at BPA, it's very, very much the part of our culture. It's about people. It's about their expertise. It's about, you know, even thinking about people that problem solve and they can see things that other people can't, finding patterns. That's very hard to replicate unless you build a specific model to do that, which it would just be mind blowing. And it's not realistic. So you need those people in the loop to help make sure that the AI is aligned to the customer needs. It's, we can change and adapt the AI based on what the customer is going through in their industry. Yeah, so I think definitely a key takeaway is to think on both sides, but have both of those conversations and keep being mindful of that.
Well, if you think about everything that you've said so far, whether it's the app that you designed or the work that you're doing, outside of BPA and inside of BPA, the key thing is the application, right? Is how is it used and is it helpful? Because I think that's kind of the one of the things that is often lost in and a lot of this hype. And it's really exciting and it's brilliant, but kind of the human centric and also you take all of this data and I've packaged it up in a really nice way, but is someone going to be able to take that and coach somebody in their team to be better with a customer as a result of it? If the answer is no, then it's kind of like, well, what was the point?
Exactly. And it's always thinking about the, I guess when you're implementing anything like this, especially with my experience with a data science project, is it's not a project where it's got a very clear end and then you can sign it off. Oh, there's that AI gone out there. Great. It's an agile approach. There will be stages where you are, you'll kind of iterate through. There'll be a cycle. You'll be able to stop and go, okay, how does that work for you? And gain that feedback and then iterate again, improve it. It will never end because, like I said, with the human in the loop part as well, it needs to be able to adapt to people. So we don't know that by implementing a certain AI in part of our product that it might change the behaviors of those people using it for good or for bad. But what that means is, we just need to make sure that it's still doing what it should be doing.
It must be hard not to get too overwhelmed by where do I start? Because there's so much that can be done and so much efficiencies that can be gained and quantum leaps that clients could see that you can work with. How do you kind of refine that into something manageable that your head doesn't explode?
Oh, yeah, my head explodes every week. No, and that's a really good question, actually. And I think that just that internal audit of being able to get individuals from different parts of the organization, don't just think this is, oh, just a technical team. Like you need people from everywhere involved in this. And that tinkering stage is enabling that tinkering stage to happen where it's very low risk and you're not sharing with the model any sort of customer data. You're almost doing it hypothetically. And that is one thing I just want to say out is when using ChatGPT, don't use any client data. Don't use anything that you wouldn't want to be used in training for their models. That type of work is best used for when, if you're using something like Azure or AWS, that's when you know that your data is secure and not being sent to that model. Mm-hmm. Just that framework. But going back to what you're saying about where to start, allowing that tinkering stage to happen from everybody, getting people back into the same room and saying, what did you find? What did you experience? And collecting those as ideas, you literally having an ideation session. And from then, you're bringing in people from all different areas and collaborating on what's possible. And I think as well, you probably get very early on people that are like, I love this. I really want to know it. I really want to learn it. And I would say, let them do it because they will lean into it with passion. They may not have a technical role traditionally, but they don't need to. I think this is becoming a lot more accessible.
And I love that.
Yeah. If they're leaning into it, crack on.
Now, you said something earlier, right? And I'm going to use it back on you. You said, explain this to me like I'm a 5-year-old, which is, again, I Hopefully that's a reference to the American Office, which I love that. Now, there's something when I was looking at what we were going to be talking about today, one of the phrases I thought, I've heard that mentioned a lot, but I don't know what it is. So explain this to me like I'm a 5-year-old, yeah? What is STEM ambassadorship?
Oh, okay. So STEM ambassador is somebody that will, it's a program that I've signed up for to be able to visit schools to do talks and discussions with young adults, children around STEM subjects. So that's like science, technology, engineering, and
we'll fill in the gap.
And of course, like my experience as a data scientist and around technology, and especially with the robotics and engineering club, it's technology and engineering is something I'm very passionate about. So it's a program set up through STEM learning, and it just enables people to request my time, to request me to come to their school and to have a discussion with a group of children to explain, you know, as a woman in tech, as maybe someone with ADHD in tech, like, what does that mean? What sort of work do I do day to day? And there was actually, when I went to my son's school, he was so proud, bless him, it's absolutely sweet. I delivered like an hour session to the children, and we set up this activity where they were data scientists. So I gave them the challenge of the problem statement is at the school, there's people are dropping litter everywhere. You know, it's becoming a big problem. And then we kind of worked through that problem and started to research about, okay, what makes people want to do that? Like, how does it start? What impact does it have on the environment? So you're then starting to build this picture of a project and why you would want to do that. And then we went on to like, what sort of data analysis methods would we do? Would we want to capture data about how much litter we pick up each day? You know, it's kind of going through the process. And the final piece was we got the laptops and we worked through a project on Scratch where the children was developing either a game or some sort of interactive poster that they can help communicate with the rest of the school why it's important to pick litter up and not litter. Like, and it was amazing. I was so creative and so engaged. It was just amazing. Yeah. So that's the kind of thing that I would do in that role. And the other thing I do is every week I run a robotics and coding club for the children at the local Exeter Technical College. And it's completely free and always will be. The vision and the passion behind that was around, especially that for me growing up, we didn't have much money. Mm. And going to a club was always expensive. Like there's four of us, you know, it just wasn't possible, which meant that I couldn't necessarily have the experience of trying new things out all the time. And what we're finding is, you know, it's accessible for anybody, no matter whether you have your neurodivergent child or whether you've got an economic disadvantage. It's you just come along, the environment is supportive, it's engaging, there's no expectations. And the children come in and they will be either coding in Scratch, they'll have a project to work on. And then we have like a showcase at the end where they explain their project and everyone claps at the end, and it's just very exciting. And we've recently started working with Lego Mindstorm Kits, which is building robots. And they are just soaring with it. I mean, these children are just so intelligent and just so engaged in it. It's amazing. And recently, very kindly, we've been donated some money from Data Button to be able to get some equipment for the children. So we're going to be, it was literally yesterday, so we're going to be looking at micro bit, which are very small computers. And what you can do with those is you can create all sorts of things to interact with the world. So if they want to, they can create a game. I've seen one example where someone's created an operation game and it's a box and there's loads of like, there's a man in there and he's like asleep. There's holes and there's like some foil in there. And with the pincers, they've got to, of course, not touch the side. And when it touches the side, it makes a noise and it says game over. So you can imagine being a child, being able to take this thing and add some components, and just what you could build is just amazing. It's like their creativity, and I'm just so excited. I can't wait for that. And we've got sessions all through the summer. So I've kind of committed some of my time to make sure that there's one every week except for the bank holiday week. Yeah, I'm just very excited. Be great.
I love that. That is just inspiring. You are a very, very special person, and you deserve every kind of award that you've won. And I know how passionate you are about all of the different areas you've spoken about, and also BPA quality and delivering exceptional work in there for the clients that BPA have. And this, I feel like we've just touched the surface of what's possible just through even with talking to you. Hopefully we can do a follow-up part and maybe focus on a particular area of certain interest for you. But Ellie Neal of BPA Quality, thank you so much. And like I say, it's been, you are awesome.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you much to Ellie Neal of BPA Quality. Now, in my experience, quality is an underutilized resource in most contact centers. If you get your quality right, you'll be astounded at some of the things that you can find, some of the things that will benefit, and they are outside of just the quality aspect. Your performance overall will improve. And I'm bound to say that. I've spent 8 happy years at BPA Quality. But we would say, even if you don't use us, please start looking at your quality function and framework. And if you do want to find out how best to do that, then you can contact Ellie, Pete Dunn, that is, or Helen Beaumont Manahan of BPA, and get on the road to delivering excellence. So once again, thank you very much for listening, and I will see you all again next week.